This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
Due to the graphic nature of this woman's crimes, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes graphic discussion of the sexual abuse of a child, which some people may find offensive. We advise extreme caution for children under the age of 13. If you suspect that a child in your life is being abused, you can call 1-800-422-4453. Or visit childhelp.org for information and resources. The pretty, blonde, sixth grade teacher was positively glowing as her students filed into the classroom. After months of hiding behind baggy clothes, she had finally decided to let her students in on some big news. In the fall of 1996, 34-year-old Mary Kay Letourneau told her students that she was pregnant with her fifth child. With a shy smile, she gushed that they were among the first to know. She hadn't even told the principal. Hands went up all over the classroom. The students asked if she was having a boy or a girl, when she was due, and if she'd still be their teacher. One question nobody asked was, who's the father? The teacher passed a sonogram photo around the class, gleefully accepting compliments, pausing at the round table where her favorite students sat. A grin spread across her face as she remembered who had been sitting there the year before. 13-year-old Vili Folau, her baby's father. Mary Kay Letourneau was pregnant with a seventh grader's child. Picture a murderer, a gangster, a thief. Did you picture a woman? We didn't think so. Society associates men with dangerous crimes. But what happens when the perpetrator is female? Every Wednesday, we examine the psychology, motivations, and atrocities of female criminals. I'm Vanessa Richardson, and you're listening to Female Criminals, a Parcast original. You can find episodes of Female Criminals and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Female Criminals for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Female Criminals in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. If you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. This is our second episode on convicted child rapist Mary Kay Letourneau, who later married her victim and raised two children with him. Last week, we discussed Mary Kay's conservative upbringing and how a dysfunctional attachment complex positioned her to become a sexual predator. She was what's known as a heterosexual nurturer, preying on adolescent boys. This week, we'll take you through Mary Kay's criminal proceedings and time in jail. Even after serving time in prison, she refused to stop sexually abusing Vili Folau. We'll also report on how she, Vili, and their two daughters are doing today. It was the spring of 1996, and the school year was drawing to a close. But 34-year-old Mary Kay Letourneau had no intention of waiting until fall to see 12-year-old Vili Folau again. She believed she was in love with the adolescent boy and saw him as her boyfriend, not a child in her classroom. And unfortunately for Villy, nobody yet noticed that his relationship with Mary Kay was dangerous. His 38-year-old single mother, Suna, was overwhelmed raising four children. So when Mary Kay began offering to help out with Villy, Suna couldn't say no. A few hours of free childcare allowed her to pick up extra shifts at work. And besides, all four of Suna's children were gifted. She was used to teachers paying them special attention. It would be months before Suna realized her son was in the care of a predator. Just a reminder before we continue, I'm not a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist, but I have done a lot of research for this show. According to Amy Walker of the Mississippi Attorney General's Office, it's common for sexual predators to groom a child's relatives to gain unrestricted access to the child. This grooming can take the form of excessive flattery of the child and family, like Mary Kay's insistence that Villy's artistic talents showed genius with unlimited potential. Ultimately, the predator's goal is to become indispensable to the child's family. That may be why Mary Kay didn't just take an interest in her underage victim. She spent a lot of time with his older brother, Perry, too. She also placed one of Villy's cousins at her special round table of gifted students, alongside Villy. Mary Kay paid for Villy's art supplies out of her own pocket. She arranged a $200 grant for him to take classes at nearby Highline Community College. She even took the classes with him, claiming she needed the continuing education credits to keep her teaching license. Initially, Suna must have been thrilled that her children had found a valuable and dedicated ally. She probably hoped Villy would go to college and lift himself out of poverty. She saw Mary Kay as an ideal role model. A role model her son needed. Villy's father, Lueva Falau, had no relationship with Villy. He was still in prison, where he'd been since Villy was just 2 years old. Lueva had assaulted Suna in front of him, leaving the boy with a seething hatred of his own father. And after watching his mother survive domestic violence, he was anxious to be seen as a man. Mary Kay had spent the previous school year openly favoring Villy, and her behavior hadn't raised many eyebrows. So, over the summer of 1996, 34-year-old Mary Kay got bolder and bolder about spending time with her victim. She often invited a group of kids to her home, including Villy. The kids all worked with her on the school yearbook. After so many late nights at school, the group was close. But as the sun set and the other kids headed home to their families, Villy stayed behind. Often they drove around in Mary Kay's old minivan with Villy behind the wheel. In June of 1996, a cop patrolling the Des Moines Marina spotted a minivan rolling by with a little boy in the driver's seat. The boy was driving erratically. It looked like he might be receiving oral sex while driving. Suspicious, the cop approached the vehicle, but by the time he got there, Mary Kay was behind the wheel and Villy was curled up in a sleeping bag on the back seat. Thinking on the fly, Mary Kay claimed that she was babysitting Villy. She said that she and her husband had gotten into an argument and she'd left the house so he could calm down. The boy in the back seat stayed quiet. The officer sensed something was off. He decided to take both Mary Kay and Villy down to the station for further questioning. But even after questioning them separately, both denied any impropriety. They were released without charges. Outside of that singular incident, the first person to worry about Mary Kay's relationship with Villy was Steve Letourneau. He didn't know yet that his wife was sexually abusing her student. He just didn't like how much time she was spending with him. Steve felt Villy could be a bad influence on their own children. At 12, Villy already smoked cigarettes, and Mary Kay went on and on about how mature he was for his age, practically an adult. But Steve wasn't so sure. Of course, this is another part of predatory grooming. According to the U.S. government's Sex Offender Management Assessment and Planning Initiative, women who offend alone against adolescent boys are oftentimes seeking a less threatening equivalent to an adult relationship. Rather than fetishizing childhood, like other predators do, they have a delusional belief that their individual victims are unusually mature. Letting Villy smoke at her house and drive her car were just some of the many ways Mary Kay convinced herself that Villy was grown up enough to be her boyfriend. She would later say of the 12-year-old, "He dominated me in the most masculine way that any man, any leader, could do." A ridiculous and deluded statement about a preteen, no matter how you slice it. But Mary Kay seemingly believed it. In July of 1996, Mary Kay was scheduled to take her children to Alaska to visit Steve's family, but she couldn't bear the thought of being away from Villy, so she decided to buy him a plane ticket to Anchorage. Without asking or even warning Steve, she added her child victim to the family vacation. Just like her own mother had ignored her emotional needs as a child, Mary Kay pushed her own kids aside all summer. When she did spend time with her children, she gathered them around to admire Villy's art. In front of Steve and his family, Mary Kay held hands with Villy. She borrowed her father-in-law's truck to take Villy to see the stars. The Letourneau family smelled a rat immediately. But even though Steve didn't like Villy, he wanted to believe that Mary Kay was just obsessed with helping a talented, underprivileged student. Not long after the Alaska trip, in early fall of 1996, 34-year-old Mary Kay felt something familiar. A test at home confirmed it. Mary Kay was pregnant. Mary Kay was overjoyed. She wanted this baby, no matter how complicated things would be. She loved being pregnant, loved giving birth, and in her twisted mind, she thought she loved Villy, the now 13-year-old who had just started seventh grade. Mary Kay had a hard time keeping the big news to herself. She mulled over ways to announce her pregnancy and introduce the world to the father. She started testing the waters by calling her friends to tell them she'd met someone new. As one friend, Michelle, relayed to crime writer Greg Olson, she was happy for Mary Kay at first. Michelle knew that things weren't working with Steve and figured they were only together for the sake of the kids. Michelle figured Steve probably had affairs from time to time, too. If Mary Kay was finally really in love, more power to her. Of course, Mary Kay failed to mention that her affair was with a child. In fact, she didn't mention his age at all. She spoke about him exactly like she would a man her own age. She gushed over his beautiful jet-black hair and called him her soulmate. In October of 1996, Mary Kay told Michelle she and her new lover hadn't started having sex yet, but were about to. This, of course, was a lie. Mary Kay was due in May, meaning she and Villy had been having sex for at least 2 months. But Michelle, still thinking her friend was seeing an adult man, encouraged her to do whatever felt right. Of course, she thought they were talking about adultery, not statutory rape. A detail Mary Kay conveniently failed to mention. And so, encouraged by unbelievably selective hearing, Mary Kay pretended to start the affair, then called back a few weeks later to share her pregnancy news. Mary Kay told Michelle she planned to tell Steve the baby was his, at least for the time being. She'd gone to bed with him shortly after she conceived to create a cover story for the pregnancy. But the clock was ticking. Mary Kay knew she'd be exposed when the baby arrived with Villy's brown skin and black hair. But as it turned out, she didn't even have that long. Coming up, exposure, scandal, divorce, and prison. Now back to the story. Towards the end of 1996, 34-year-old Mary Kay Letourneau was pregnant. The father, her 13-year-old former student, Vili Folau. But Mary Kay was enthralled as she prepared for her baby's arrival, albeit in secret. She wore baggy clothes to school to disguise her figure. At home, she told her husband, Steve, that the baby was his. At the same time, she kept sneaking around with Vili, who was excited about the pregnancy. To Mary Kay, the baby only cemented the love between her and Vili. But this more accurately meets the psychological criteria for a phenomenon known as traumatic bonding. According to therapist Tiamara Hill, many survivors of child abuse strongly desire the nurturing and affection of their abusers. A few factors that put someone at risk for traumatic bonding include low socioeconomic status, lack of a support system, and witnessing domestic abuse in one's family of origin. All of these applied to Vili, the 13-year-old father-to-be. It's hard to imagine someone less prepared for parenthood than a 13-year-old boy who despised his own absent, imprisoned father. He craved advice from someone who knew how to raise children, but Mary Kay kept reminding him that nobody could know that he was the father, not yet. She promised she'd come up with a way for them to be together. When she couldn't physically be with Vili, Mary Kay wrote him love notes, but he couldn't keep them in his room at his mother's house, so Vili gave some of the notes back to Mary Kay after reading. She didn't hide them very well. One day in January of 1997, Steve Letourneau found a stash of Mary Kay's illicit correspondence. The letters hit him like an open palm slap. His wife wasn't having their fifth child. She was having Vili's first. Steve was enraged, but he wasn't sure what to do. If he went to the police, he'd shatter his own life, too. He'd expose his children to embarrassment, and there was no guarantee the cops would actually do anything. So Steve did what Steve always did. He avoided direct confrontation with his wife at all costs. Instead, he went to Vili's house to confront the boy, as if he was a fellow grown man. When Vili answered the door, Steve lit into him. He made it clear that the relationship was over, effective immediately. If Vili kept seeing Mary Kay, Steve said he'd show their love letters to Vili's mother and to everyone else. Vili shrank back from the screaming adult filling up his front doorway and quietly promised to end things. For all that Mary Kay insisted he was an old soul, he was still just a 13-year-old kid. But of course, ending things wasn't up to Vili, just like starting the sexual abuse hadn't been up to him either. Now that Mary Kay was deeply attached and pregnant with his baby, there was nothing Vili could do to make her stop. Steve, meanwhile, was at a loss for what to do. He confided in his mother, Sharon, swearing her to secrecy. So, naturally, word quickly spread to the entire Letourneau clan. At a family party in January of 1997, the news reached Linda Gardner, the wife of one of Steve's cousins. Unlike the Letourneaus, Linda didn't need to think about whether or not this was child abuse, and she was going to do something about it. On February 25th, 1997, Linda dialed Child Protective Services and told them everything she knew. But instead of springing into action, the person on the other end of the line told Linda to complain to the school district, since the person she was reporting was a teacher. Maybe because the victim was a boy, or because Linda was so far removed from the situation, the CPS employee just didn't believe her. But Linda pressed on. She called up the school district headquarters and talked to an administrator there. He, too, seemed strangely apathetic. Linda was perplexed. But the sad fact is that in 1997, there was very little social context or judicial precedent for the prosecution of women in a position of trust who molest adolescent boys. Today, we know this type of abuse is fairly common. According to a 2017 Scientific American report based on the U.S. National Crime Victimization Survey, 35% of male victims who reported rape or sexual assault suffered at the hands of at least one female perpetrator. 79% of men and boys who said they were forced to penetrate another person reported a female perpetrator. At the time, however, Linda Gardner felt she was out of options. She tried to move on and forget about the whole thing. But the next day, on February 26, 1997, a police detective interviewed Linda Gardner. Apparently, someone at CPS took her report seriously after all. The detective, Patricia Maley, took down Linda's story in full detail. She gathered evidence and, on March 4, 1997, interviewed 13-year-old Billy. Though he insisted that Mary Kay wasn't forcing him to do anything, he admitted he was the father of her baby. He also told Detective Maley about their first sexual encounter in June of 1996, when Billy was 12. That afternoon, Detective Maley pulled Mary Kay out of her staff meeting. Now entering her third trimester, the extremely pregnant 35-year-old was nervous as she walked with Maley to the police cruiser parked outside. Maley said, "I think you know what this is about." Mary Kay replied, "I think I have an idea." Detective Maley placed Mary Kay Letourneau under arrest and loaded her into the back of a squad car. She was charged with second-degree child rape. In a tearful interview at the police station, Mary Kay first tried to blame her husband. She said the love letters were just something he was using as blackmail to keep her from divorcing him. But when Detective Maley pressed Mary Kay about the pregnancy, she admitted the baby was not Steve's. But that admission opened the floodgates. Mary Kay poured her heart out. She didn't want to have any more babies with a husband she didn't love. She wanted to be with Billy. She knew that the news would get a hold of the salacious story of child rape soon enough. But her very worst fear was that she would no longer have access to Billy Falau once this went public. That evening, Mary Kay was released on bail. She didn't know what she could possibly do with her life now. She reached out to the only person she knew who understood how to weather a sex scandal, her father, John Schmitz. They'd been distant for years, but he headed for Seattle right away to support his daughter. Senator Schmitz had fathered and subsequently abandoned two children outside of his marriage, the only time the senator ever made national news. He knew exactly how Mary Kay must be feeling, and on some level, he probably blamed himself for setting the example. But he'd never had sex with children. That part was all Mary Kay. While she waited for her trial, Mary Kay hired a defense attorney. Steve got a lawyer, too, to help him figure out what was next for himself and the kids. After consulting with her new attorney, on March 12, 1997, Mary Kay Letourneau pled not guilty to two counts of child rape. Her attorney hoped for a plea deal involving sex offender treatment and rehabilitation, rather than a minimum 7-year prison sentence. If the prosecutors promised treatment rather than prison, Mary Kay was willing to plead guilty. She underwent a battery of psychiatric tests. As her belly grew and her due date got closer, Mary Kay was diagnosed with bipolar disorder by court-appointed psychiatrist Dr. Julia Moore. According to the American Psychological Association, bipolar disorder is a mood disorder formerly known as manic depression, characterized by alternating periods of mania and deep depression. Some bipolar disorder patients also experience symptoms of psychosis. But bipolar psychosis probably doesn't explain Mary Kay's delusional belief that Villy was capable of an adult relationship. And a study of female sexual predators conducted by researcher Donna Vandiver found that this type of psychosis is the exception, not the norm, in this population of offenders. Still, Dr. Julia Moore recommended that Mary Kay seek medication and psychotherapy after the 35-year-old gave birth. Most medications used for bipolar disorder aren't safe for developing fetuses. On May 29, 1997, Mary Kay Letourneau delivered her fifth child, a baby girl named Audrey Lokelani Folau. The infant was born with a shock of black hair that stuck straight up like a mohawk. They didn't need a paternity test to prove this baby wasn't Steve's. The only question now was whether Mary Kay would get to raise her daughter. A possible 7-year jail sentence was in her future. She might miss all of Audrey's firsts. By the time she got out, the baby might not even want to know her. Up next, Mary Kay goes behind bars. Now back to the story. In May of 1997, 35-year-old schoolteacher and sexual predator Mary Kay Letourneau gave birth to a healthy baby girl. The child, named Audrey, was fathered by 13-year-old Villy Folau. Mary Kay stood accused of 2 counts of child rape for sexually abusing Villy over a period of more than a year. The judge ordered Mary Kay to cease all contact with her victim while she was free on bail, but she never considered barring Villy from the delivery room. He came in secret and left in secret, but was there long enough to hold his daughter. Villy and his mother, Suna, both loved the baby. No matter how bad the circumstances of her conception, this child was innocent. They both badly wanted to take care of her. Mary Kay, on the other hand, wasn't sharing such a magical experience. By the time she returned home from the hospital with Audrey, Steve had moved out and taken the other 4 Letourneau children with him. He was filled with rage over the circumstances of their separation and threatened Mary Kay on several occasions. And despite the risk, Mary Kay ignored the judge's orders to stop talking to Villy. She snuck him into the house to help her with the baby. When they weren't together in person, they talked on the phone. She was still convinced they were star-crossed lovers, not predator and victim. When she started receiving letters from a fan club, it only deepened this feeling. When her story hit national news, Mary Kay expected to get hate mail. What she actually got was far worse. Pedophiles from all over the country wrote letters of support to Mary Kay. Her story of forbidden love sounded exactly like their own sexual experiences with children. Mary Kay was disgusted. Like most female sexual predators falling into the heterosexual nurturer category, she didn't see herself as someone who was attracted to children. She saw herself as someone who happened to have met an adult living temporarily in a child's body. Realizing that pedophiles were embracing her as one of their own gave her chills, but it didn't make her think twice about her relationship with Villy. When she met with her lawyer, she didn't ask about the progress with her case. She asked, "When can Villy and I be together?" It was becoming obvious, even to Mary Kay's own legal counsel, that no one with any common sense would recommend sending her to therapy over prison. She obviously had no remorse and no desire to change. So the defense strategy changed to obtaining the shortest jail sentence possible. Mary Kay's lawyer struck a plea deal with the prosecution. Mary Kay would plead guilty and report to prison immediately, once she had served at least 3 months in prison and taken prescription psychiatric medication for 6 months, she would be released on probation. There were two more conditions for the deal. First, Mary Kay had to agree to give up Audrey to Suna, Villy's mother, for the duration of her prison term. Second, and far harder for Mary Kay to agree to, was no further contact with Villy. Judge Linda Lau was very clear on this point. Whatever had been between Mary Kay and Villy was over. She could talk to the boy's mother when she got out if she wanted to discuss Audrey's welfare, but Villy was off limits forever. Mary Kay had no choice but to agree. Otherwise, she'd serve 7 years. In preparation for prison, Mary Kay found a hairstylist willing to highlight and foil her hair in the kitchen. She spent her last night of freedom with her few remaining friends, laughing and talking. It wasn't until she went to bed that night that it finally hit Mary Kay. She was going to prison. She, the senator's daughter, who grew up playing on the White House lawn, would be just another inmate. It was a global story on August 7, 1997, when Mary Kay reported to King County Jail. Disgustingly, many headlines made tongue-in-cheek, hot-for-teacher references, making light of Mary Kay's predation. Talk radio shock jocks loved the story. They called Villy lucky and asked listeners to call in with stories about their own crushes on teachers. Meanwhile, the very real, now 14-year-old boy at the center of the story was confused, overwhelmed, and mystified by teen fatherhood in the spotlight. None of his friends could give him any useful advice. He didn't know anyone else who had a baby with a grown woman. And Mary Kay was getting jealous, worrying about whether Villy would move on with a girl his own age while she was in jail. The only thing she cared about was getting back to him. Some brain imaging studies suggest that romantic feelings can function very much like a drug addiction. According to biological anthropologist Helen Fisher, it's possible that all of our other addictions, from gambling to nicotine to heroin, are just hijacking a system in the brain that first evolved to encourage pair bonding and reproduction. This adaptive system might malfunction in people like Mary Kay, making it impossible to let go, even when it's clear that the consequences of remaining in a relationship are dire. In short, Villy was a drug, and Mary Kay thought of nothing but her next hit. Meanwhile, Mary Kay's fame grew and grew. Villy gave an interview with a local reporter to tell his side of the story. Admirers came to see Mary Kay in prison. She received love letters and marriage proposals. Bored to tears in her cell, the former teacher agreed to see some of her bizarre admirers. She entertained the fan club, which only prolonged the media circus. But as far as Judge Lau was concerned, Mary Kay had met all of the conditions of the plea deal. She was paroled on January 6, 1998. Of course, Judge Lau had no idea she'd been secretly contacting her victim from jail. She'd been using her groupies to carry messages to Villy. After her release, Mary Kay moved into a friend's spare room. According to the conditions of her release, Mary Kay could have no contact with her Letourneau children for another 6 months. They were in Alaska with their father, and if Steve had his way, they would stay there until they grew up. Mary Kay's only contact with Audrey was supposed to be in the form of the breast milk she was still pumping for the baby. But someone from her fan club got her photos of Audrey and Villy, which she cherished. If she'd left things at that, she might have stayed out of prison. But Mary Kay never knew how to leave well enough alone. On February 3, 1998, less than a month after her release, 36-year-old Mary Kay and 14-year-old Vili Folau piled into a tiny VW Fox, along with $6,200 in cash, a pile of baby clothing, and Mary Kay's passport. Vili didn't have one, but presumably they had a plan for that. They were going to pick up Audrey from the Folau house and flee. But first, Mary Kay had another item on her agenda. After months apart, she was eager to sexually abuse Vili again. They parked in a driveway and got busy steaming up the windows. Those fogged windows attracted the attention of Seattle cop Todd Harris. He had no idea who was inside the vehicle, but he ran the plates anyway. When Mary Kay's name came up, Officer Harris knew he was in for a long night, especially after he spotted the second person in the car. Mary Kay was arrested and sent straight back to jail. This time, there would be no breaks and no accommodations. 7 years for child rape, not a day less. Soon, Mary Kay announced that she was pregnant again. In her brief time on the outside, she hadn't seen a need for birth control. Once again, she made headlines. Mary Kay's lawyers helped her ink a lucrative deal for a book, co-authored with Vili, to be published in French. Apparently, the story was seen quite differently in France. There, Mary Kay and Vili were seen as the star-crossed lovers Mary Kay truly believed them to be. Mary Kay still wasn't allowed to write to Vili, but she could write to her lawyers, and so could he. Without ever contacting each other, they could co-author the book and use the attorneys to piece it together. Mary Kay began writing out her memories. All the while, her belly grew. In October of 1998, 36-year-old Mary Kay gave birth in a prison hospital. She named her second daughter, Georgia. Just like Audrey, this new baby would go to her paternal grandmother. Once again, Mary Kay spent her days in jail, pumping breast milk and sending it off to a baby she would never hold. The 7 years passed slowly. On the outside, her children grew up. In 1999, Steve Letourneau officially divorced Mary Kay. The kids stayed in Alaska with their dad and had no interest in visiting their mother. The book Mary Kay and Vili co-authored was eventually released, but only in French. Mary Kay fought tooth and nail to prevent it from coming out in the U.S. She claimed her lawyers had inserted made-up stories, but some speculate that her real problem with the book was much more mundane. Vili wrote like the teenager he was. Mary Kay wrote about a transcendent love for her student. Vili, on the other hand, mostly scribbled down clumsy sex scenes. In the book, he claimed the whole affair started with him making a $20 bet in sixth grade that he could seduce the teacher. He estimated the number of times they had sex, like a blustering, insecure kid boasting on the playground. It's hard to say how much of what he wrote is true. Reading the dirty stories Vili wrote about her might have been the first and only time Mary Kay saw him as the boy he was. He was no Romeo. He was just like every other horny teenager in her classroom. On the outside, Vili and their two daughters waited and waited and waited. By August 4, 2004, when Mary Kay Letourneau was released from prison for the last time, Vili was 21 years old and Mary Kay was 42. The same day Mary Kay left prison, Villy asked the court to vacate the standing no-contact order between them. Judge Lau threw up her hands and granted the motion. Apparently, nothing she could do would keep them apart. On May 20, 2005, the couple tied the knot. The 43-year-old bride took 21-year-old Villy's surname, becoming Mary Kay Folau. The newly minted Folaus weren't shy about basking in their notoriety. When Villy decided he wanted to be a DJ, he named himself DJ Headline and promoted his career by co-hosting Hot for Teacher Nights at a local nightclub. They continued to give interviews, always coming out with new sensational details about their relationship when hype threatened to die down. The two Folau daughters knew their parents' relationship was unusual, but it never seemed to bother them. As they grew, both girls found it fun to have such a young father. He was able to relate to their hobbies and interests in ways an older dad might not. Audrey and Georgia Folau are now 22 and 21 years old, respectively. They're healthy, happy young women. It seems Grandma Suna did a great job helping her son raise his young daughters while their mother was in prison. But the fact remains that the Folau's relationship took away an adolescent boy's freedom. It was sexual abuse, pure and simple. Billy should have been focused on growing up. Instead, he was busy attending to the emotional and sexual desires of his sixth-grade teacher, a married mother of four. Young Billy probably felt that he genuinely loved Mary Kay, but he'll never know how much of that feeling was ever real and how much it had to do with her extensive grooming. If Mary Kay really loved Villy, she would have encouraged him to seek out a relationship with someone his own age after she went to jail. Instead, she made sure he never had the chance to love anyone but her. After almost 15 years of marriage to his childhood abuser, Villy finally seems to be breaking this traumatic bond. In August of 2019, the couple filed for separation. Villy is now 36 and Mary Kay, 57. When asked what advice he has for his younger self, Villy simply replied, "Don't do it." Thanks again for tuning in to Female Criminals. We'll be back on Wednesday with a brand new episode. For more information on Mary Kay Letourneau, we found the books If Loving You Is Wrong by Greg Olson and Mass with Mary by Christina Dress, Mary Kay Letourneau, and Tama Lisa Johnson, extremely helpful to our research. You can find all episodes of Female Criminals and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Female Criminals, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Female Criminals on Spotify, just open the app and type Female Criminals in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll see you next time. Female Criminals was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Dick Schroeder, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Carly Madden. This episode of Female Criminals was written by Yelena Waugh. I'm Vanessa Richardson.